Good morning. So Neisseria gonorrhea pen A gene codes for penicillin binding protein 2, which is one of the major targets for beta-lactam antibiotics, which includes penicillin and cephalosporin. The mosaic alteration in pen A is thought to have resulted from transformation with genes from commensal Neisseria species. And this mosaic pen A gene has been associated with oral cephalosporin treatment failures in Asia and Australia and Europe. We were concerned about this in San Francisco, and we screened our surveillance isolates, the GISP isolates, in 2008, and found that 9% of 187 isolates from symptomatic male urethritis patients had the mosaic pattern in their pen A. When sequencing, we did find two variants, one which we called SFA that resulted in a higher oral cephalosporin MIC, and another variant, SFB, which resulted in a minimal change in oral cephalosporin MIC. And when we followed up on four patients who had a cefpodoxime MIC of greater than or equal to 0.5, we did not identify any treatment failures. However, we were still concerned that there might be treatment failures that were unidentified in San Francisco, and so we wanted to develop a program for active treatment follow-up for persons at risk for failure. But to do this, we needed a new assay, and because no local resources were available for additional cultures or susceptibility testing, and the surveillance culture results had a long turnaround time that we didn't get back soon enough to follow up with patients in a timely way. The published assay that we had used for the 2008 data, we knew cross-reacted with Neisseria meningitidis, and it couldn't distinguish the two variants that we found in our isolates, and for those reasons, we weren't able to use it on NAT specimens, which in San Francisco is the Aptima Complex 2, or AC2. So Abel Wu in the Public Health Lab developed a new real-time PCR assay for mosaic pen A. He used FRET probes as a melting curve assay and used a different probe site from previously published assay. And this focused around amino acid 545, which was able to distinguish SFA from SFB as well as SFA from commensal Neisseria species. So we, over time, have developed this screening protocol where we screen STD clinic specimens for the mosaic pen A using the real-time PCR. We screen all Neisseria gonorrhea positive specimens, either positive by the Aptima or by culture, from any anatomic site. And we initially started from April to November screening or testing just symptomatic patients, but starting in December, we began screening all positive specimens. Patients that by PCR had the SFA were contacted for retesting, test of cure, about 3 weeks after treatment in order to reduce the chances of false positive tests of cure. They're also interviewed, and starting in December 2009, we began doing partner elicitation by trained disease investigators. And as we get surveillance susceptibility results back, we compare those to our PCR results, and discordant specimens are investigated. So this slide shows the results of all our isolates that have been tested with agar dilution to get a cephalosporin MIC and PCR. So over the last 2 years, we've had 216 specimens that have been tested by both. And the sensitivity and specificity based on predicting cephalosporin MIC of greater than or equal to 0.25 is pretty good. So sensitivity was 94%, specificity was 99%. You can see, though, that we did have one false positive and one false negative specimen. So when we further investigated these, the false positive specimen had cephalosporin and cefixime MICs of 0.06. Sequencing of the pen A gene did confirm that it was a mosaic. But this is the only isolate in this group that was susceptible to penicillin and tetracycline, so highlighting that this isolate likely lacked other genes important in elevating cephalosporin MIC. When we investigated the false negative specimen, this was a specimen with a cefpodoxime MIC of 0.25, cefixime MIC of 0.125. Sequencing confirmed that it was not did not have mosaic pen A, It did have other PenA alterations listed here that have been shown to be important in penicillin resistance, although their role in cephalosporin resistance is not known at this time. And again, there may be other genes that we did not look for that were altered in this specimen. So this shows the results of our screening in the first time period from April to November when we were screening symptomatic patients only. There were 495 patients diagnosed with gonorrhea at the STD clinic during this time. 248 were symptomatic, and 209 of those were tested with the PCR. That was 156 were culture specimens, and 92 were aphthema specimens. There were some specimens that didn't have a result because they didn't amplify in the PCR test. And that was higher for the aphthema specimens. 17% didn't amplify, and 2% of culture specimens also didn't amplify. But 190 had a result, and that's shown in the graph, predominantly non-mosaic. But we did identify 6 specimens that had the SFA mosaic and 6 specimens with SFB mosaic, and that was about 3% during this time period. So in the later time period, most recently in December and January, when we were testing all patients or all specimens that were gonorrhea positive, there were 198 positive specimens. 179 of those had a mosaic PCR test, and those were from 114 patients. There were 41 cultures, 138 aphthema specimens. We had a higher rate of specimens during this time period. About a third did not amplify with our PCR, and all of the ones that didn't amplify were aphthema specimens. There were 120 that had a result. Again, in the bar graph, they're predominantly non-mosaic, but there were 11 specimens from 5 patients that had the SFA mosaic. You can see they were from all 4 types of specimens that we tested: urine, urethral, NAP, pharynx, and rectal, and there was one SFB specimen as well. And this was 9% of specimens, about 7% of patients tested. So during our follow-up of these patients who had the SFA mosaic from April to January, there were 11 total patients. 10 of them had received triclocephalodoxine and azithromycin. 9 of the 11 were men who had sex with men, but there was a heterosexual couple that were partners that also tested positive. Of the 11, 4 did have subsequent tests of cure that were negative, and symptoms had resolved in an additional 2, and they were contacted by telephone for follow-up, but they declined to come in for retesting. 3 patients were unable to be contacted. We did not identify one probable treatment failure, and we have a recent additional positive test of cure that is currently being investigated. So a few more additional details on a probable treatment failure. This is an HIV-positive man of sex with men with hypospadias, which is a developmental urethral abnormality. He presented to the clinic in mid-November with 3 days of dysuria and discharge. He was treated with cephalodoxine, 400 milligrams, and a gram of azithromycin. And his urethral isolate was positive for the SFA mosaic by PCR. And subsequently, his culture susceptibility returned with cephalodoxine MCO2. When he was contacted for interview, he reported that his symptoms promptly resolved within 2 days after treatment, and he didn't immediately present for a retesting. During December, he went traveling and did have his only sexual encounter during this time, where he received fellatio. A few days after that, he had a few days of dysuria, but that resolved without treatment. And when he returned to the clinic in early January, he did have a urine aphthema test that was positive, and that specimen was mosaic in the PCR. However, his culture at the time when he presented for retreatment was negative. He was treated with ceftriaxone, and his follow-up retest of cure was negative. So we feel this is a probable treatment failure, although probably not conclusive. So conclusions, we feel that our mosaic PenA PCR assay can be used to identify patients at risk for treatment failure, and we get results back in a short enough time period to allow for clinically relevant follow-up. We have had a substantial number of NAT specimens that we're not able to get a result from, and laboratory colleagues are attempting to improve that. We have unfortunately identified our first probable treatment failure. Again, perhaps not conclusive, but we're using the results from this program to inform revision of local gonorrhea treatment recommendations. And I just want to say that this is an important, perhaps a useful adjunct for culture surveillance programs, but certainly can't replace culture surveillance programs at all. But in our setting where most of our gonorrhea is diagnosed with nucleic acid tests, we feel that this is a useful adjunct. So I want to acknowledge especially my laboratory colleagues, Mark Pandori and Abel Wu in the public health lab, Jeff Klausner, Susan Cole, and Kyle Bernstein in the SCD division, as well as other collaborators. Thanks.
You knew I was going to say that. Penn, thanks again. Once again, as usual, very nicely done. Do you think, as those later ones where you saw all that 33% not amplifying, that it might not be the assay, but that the Penn-A is actually mosaics changing?
Well, we actually are doing spot sequencing of Penn-A, and we haven't seen that, actually, that it's changing. I think that that has to do with our change from testing only symptomatic patients to testing all positive specimens. And so likely the organism burden in those asymptomatic specimens is probably lower than the detection of the PCR, but is able to be detected by the, as we know, very sensitive TMA.
Yeah, because as you know, that I presented last year at ISSDR, and we were talking about it a little bit yesterday, is we're finding, we have this one mosaic that's only a semi-mosaic. It's got, you know, 150 bases of wild type at one end, which is actually the wild type sequence and not the mosaic. And that's the one we're actually seeing more now all over the United States. The traditional one that came out of the Far East doesn't seem to be spreading around. We've found this semi-mosaic all the way, you know, Las Vegas, San Diego, Minneapolis, Chicago. So that's the one that seems to, as far as we're seeing through GISP and those isolates, spreading and not the one. So I'm wondering if you're just not amplifying it.
Well, I think it's an important limitation of using a PCR assay in this way. We're only looking at one small part of one gene, and we know that this story is probably has to do with multiple genes.
We're all looking for gene X is what we're all looking for.
Which again is why culture is so important. So I agree, but it's also why we're looking at our discordant culture results when they come back and trying to do sequencing on any that are discordant in order to pick up any changes that we see. And our variants in San Francisco again are not exactly the same ones that were identified initially in Japan. And you have kind of more of a wild type.
Yeah, and the more we look, the more different variants we're going to find. We all know that. So yeah. Thanks.
So David, were those semi mosaics? What are their MICs? Are they resistant or increased?
Yeah, they have decreased susceptibility. Actually, we don't. You know, we hardly worry about cefpodoxine of 0.5. These are all ones and twos and threes. I mean, they're higher than that. We've actually generated one in the lab that has a ceftriaxone of 1.0. So these things are capable of doing it. It's just we're looking for all the combinations of genes.
Yes.
Somewhere there's a gene X that is the final. Because we found some that have non-mosaic Penn A's. Actually, the more we look, the more we find, as Kevin can attest, that have elevated MICs and have a non-mosaic Penn A. So there's a number of situations and factors going on in these things.
Just a methods question. I may have missed this. You were taking two swabs as your PCR sample, or were you using the AC2 transport media? Or?
Right. Yeah. So these were all tested from the AC2 transport media, and they had to undergo a DNA extraction step as well, performed in the lab, and that's certainly been, you know, I think a laboratory challenge.
We've tried to do that, doing PCR assays from AC2, and just really the systems that we've tried just haven't worked well at all. And so we feel like we need to get another specimen for the PCR. Did you use the culture specimens, the actual cultured organisms from those patients who were cultured?
Yeah, so if there was a culture available, urethral culture, then we use that preferentially because of
right.
a lower rate of...
Right, I'll bet you it's got something to do with trying to use that AC2 transport media for the PCR.
We definitely know that that's yeah. a challenge.
Quick question for you. What is the last patient you presented, the HIV positive gentleman, what was his MIC for azithromycin?
Azithromycin was 1, I believe.
Okay, and the second question, I just forgot. what was it? Let me think about what it was. I'm trying to think what it was. It was a really important one. No, I'm not.
The ceftriaxone and MIC was 0.0.
Oh, I know what it is. The pharyngeal isolates. I was wondering if you had, because all the ones that we've heard about so far have been the urethral. And we're really interested in terms of the pharynx. And I know you guys are using gnats for everything, but I'm really curious on whether you have any pharyngeal samples, any cultures from gonorrhea and have looked at that, because we've been concerned, as you know, about that being a reservoir.
Yeah, no, I think that we have an interest in looking further at pharyngeal specimens in particular. We do have, we don't have any pharyngeal cultures yet. We're trying to integrate that into our system a little bit more. So far we've only had mosaic by PCR from the abdomen.
Have you thought about in your clinic on the men that you culture in the throat, getting both a gnat and a culture, or going back to culture for the throat?
Well, currently we don't do any culturing except from symptomatic urethritis patients. So those discussions have been ongoing. There are kind of some workforce issues in the laboratory that have to do with that. So, I think that would be the ideal situation.
Hi, Ron Ballard, CDC. There must be really some doubt about whether your final case there was a true treatment failure or not. But the point is, if it is a true treatment failure with an MIC of 2.0, then we've got real problems on our hands because, you know, we don't have any real clinical correlates with MICs. Did you happen to do susceptibilities to suffixime on that particular isolate?
Yeah, the suffixime on that was 0.25, I believe.
So, okay. Yeah. The whole point being, of course, that cefpodoxime is not exactly the best antibiotic in the world to treat gonorrhea. It's got the wrong pharmacokinetics. I know it's cheap, but this drug could actually help select for resistant strains. And I must say, I seem to be a voice in the wilderness that's saying, hey, please consider the possibility of changing to suffixime if you want an oral cephalosporin.
And again, that's what one of my conclusions was, that we're definitely one of the reasons we started this program and why we're doing it is so that we can use it to modify our local treatment recommendations. So, moving forward on that.
Thank you.